Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And by good today, Jim, I guess it means that it's good that Bernie Sanders will probably not be our next president. This story actually centers around his wife, Jane Sanders. The Washington Examiner reports, quote, Burlington College in Vermont announced Monday it will close its academic programs on May 27th in the face of a huge debt incurred under the leadership of then-President Jane Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders' wife. According to a press release from the private, nonprofit liberal arts school, it has been on probation with its accrediting agency, the New England Association of Schools and Colleges, quote, due to not meeting its financial resources standards since July 2014. Much of the debt was from the purchase of its headquarters building and an additional 32 acres by Jane Sanders in 2010. Sanders purchased the land from the Catholic Diocese, which made the sale to help pay $20 million to settle 26 pre-sex abuse scandals. Sanders was named president of the school in 2004, resigned in 2011. She got $200,000 to leave, and then the next president had to resign amid protests from students over poor financial handling as well. So, Jim, this actually comes just as experts estimate that if Bernie Sanders gets what he wants on health care, it won't cost $16 trillion, it'll cost $32 trillion. So poor budgeting apparently runs in the family.
Who saw this coming, Greg? my understanding, look, you look at these numbers, it just looks like the university could not continue under the crushing weight of that heavy metaphor. And I think the most fun part, I want to go back and see at one point Bernie Sanders has denounced these golden parachutes that these fat cats get when they run the place into the ground and they make terrible decisions and they don't care about the long-term costs. And then they get out of there because my understanding is she walked out with 200 grand, which is a pretty nice severance package. I think most folks, a lot of folks don't make 200 grand in a year. A lot of people are lucky if they get any severance package when they lose their jobs. It just seems that Jane Sanders is pretty much the epitome of what Bernie Sanders is denouncing. But I'm guessing that he'll probably make an exception for her.
Well, you remember with the tax deductions that it's right around that 200, 250 line where anything south of that he's perfectly okay with.
And Yes.
He always finds a loophole to protect himself.
He spends a lot of time talking about loopholes. So clearly he's thought a lot about how to make them work.
All right. Well, we'll get back to Bernie Sanders and more specifically his supporters in just a moment. But as we move to the bad martini now, this one's actually one of the more fun bad martinis we've had, as Marco Rubio lets the Washington Post have it for basically basing an entire story on drivel. Senator Marco Rubio, according to Politico, fired off a late night tweet storm Monday, slamming a pair of Washington Post stories on his supposed post-presidential campaign plans and describing the newspaper's sources as, quote, just people who want to sound like they are in the know, unquote. Rubio kicked off his online rant at 11:17 p.m. Monday, which is usually not a good plan, but tweeting to a link in the Washington Post story headline, Five People Who Are Never Going to Be Donald Trump's Vice President, along with a link to the story, which lists Rubio among the five who would turn down a spot on Trump's ticket. The Florida senator added his own commentary on the Post sourcing, quote, funny to read about unnamed people close to me who claim to know my thinking on future plans. They just make it up. Then they had another story saying that Rubio's given up on the Senate because he hates it. He says, I've never said those words to anyone, so I don't know who the longtime friend is that's quoted in the article. Then just to drive home the point, he talked about unnamed sources, not sure whether or not he would work on his chest or his legs tomorrow at the gym. And then in a future tweet, he said, a source who knows his cousin's wife's dentist, Rubio, might do cardio instead. So Rubio is good at zinging the Post here, and Jim, the Post looks pretty stupid.
Yeah, and this is Chris Cillizza, who usually isn't known for rushing with poorly sourced or wildly exaggerated stories. And let's look at Occam's razor. Right? Let's look for the simplest explanation. Since ending his campaign and those last couple appearances, both at the last campaign announcement and when he returned to Capitol Hill, Marco Rubio did not look like a guy who was eager to jump back into this, who was already looking for that next position. He looked like a guy who had taken a beating and sounded like one. It sounded like he was, exhausted from this and maybe even dispirited or disillusioned by it. Since then, he's, traveled out to the Middle East. He's been doing, his work as a senator. You haven't heard him mention anything about, oh, should I run for governor or something like that? There was a lot of speculation that, well, if Rubio didn't win the presidency, he'd run for governor in 2018. Look, you know, I think it's safe to say that Rubio hasn't, you know, doesn't know what he'll be doing in 2018. But, you know, talking to a whole bunch of Rubio colleagues, saying, well, he doesn't know what to do with himself next. One, I'm not sure how much of a huge story that is or the newsworthiness of it. If Rubio's got plans, he'll be sure to announce us soon. I think it's safe to say that we're seeing, you know, Marco Rubio rather exasperated with the way the press covers him, his decisions, and politics in general. Because obviously this is getting a lot more attention than, you know, anything he did in his trip to the Middle East or anything he's doing in the closing months of his career as a U.S. senator.
Yeah, that's a good indictment of the media in general, that stories like this and then Rubio's reaction to it get more analysis and more attention than meaningful, issue-oriented, policy-driven discussions up on Capitol Hill or
trips. And Greg, isn't the worst part when, like, two guys on a podcast talk about that instead of...
It is.
Our media criticism comes full circle and bites us in the butt. So.
It is. It's terrible. It's awful. And I would simply point out that if you do want to see a meaty, substantive coverage of what's going on in Washington on stories that matter but don't get covered, check out the Morning Jolt the last couple of days on opioid legislation. I'm assuming it's anti-opioid addiction legislation.
Yes, it's not promoting it. Yeah.
And then also cybersecurity, which you're talking about today. So Jim is covering the stories that matter.
Just an observation, you know, the House of Representatives is doing things. You may not be hearing about it, but it's doing things for everybody's out there. The Republicans in Capitol Hill don't ever do anything. Well, are you reading about it? Are you looking up this news? So anyway.
On to the crazy martini, which is a follow-up to yesterday's good martini. This is from Roll Call. A contentious Nevada Democratic convention this past weekend has led to a barrage of threats against the chairwoman of the state party. And it's led by the state party's lawyer to send a rather remarkable letter to the Democratic National Committee, warning of the risk of violent outbursts at the National Convention in Philadelphia. Quote, having seen up close the lack of conscience or concern for the ramifications of their actions, indeed the glee with which they engaged in such destructive behavior, we expect similar tactics at the National Convention in July, wrote Nevada Party Counsel Bradley Schrager in a letter dated Monday. Quote, we therefore formally complain to the DNC regarding these unfortunate events, and warned the body that the goal of many of these individuals, sanctioned or encouraged by the Sanders campaign, is not party building but something more sinister and unproductive. The Sanders campaign says it did not encourage any of that behavior. They do want everyone's voice to be heard according to their First Amendment rights. The woman who has been harassed is a woman named Roberta Lang, a Democratic operative and confidant of Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid. She's gotten messages like, love how you broke the system. We know where you live, where you work, where you eat, where your kids go to school. We have everything on you. You made a bad choice. Prepare for hell.
I was going to observe that I just wish these Sanders supporters could you know, just behave and hold themselves to a higher standard. I wish they could show the respect for others and the appreciation of the dignity of the process that we've come to expect from, you know, Donald Trump supporters, Greg. So we covered the dispute over in Nevada. Now this like formal complaint and this warning to the Philadelphia convention. Somebody's got to do something about these people. Wasn't Republicans supposed to be the ones tearing themselves apart in this sense of division there? We don't know what to expect from the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. I will note, Greg, I remember being in Boston in 2004 when John Kerry was getting the nomination. And there was a little bit of, you know, the anti-war protesters. Some of the folks had been with Howard Dean, kind of the hard lefties were kind of underwhelmed with John Kerry. And as radical as they are, it's hard to blame them because John Kerry is pretty underwhelming. But I remember seeing like an entire line of armor of riot cops in full armor marching down the street and getting ready to do it. And all the extensive security barriers and parallel, you know, fences and, you know, barbed wire and all the things. You know, this is the beginning of the era of conventions having to be like armored camps. And right in the middle of major cities. And you get the feeling we're going to get more of this in Philadelphia. And if there really is this sense of Sanders supporters that they've gotten cheated or they've gotten betrayed by the party or that Sanders was going to be the nominee and he had the nomination stolen from him, at some point, don't you kind of have to wonder if you'll get kind of the Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, you know, really angry left trying to disrupt things. And it could be a much more dramatic bit of fighting and protests and objection and kind of a atmosphere, if not violence and threats, then certainly vehement, loud, noisy protests going on in Philadelphia as much as there is in Cleveland.
Well, yeah, now that there's not likely to be a contested Republican convention, perhaps Roger Stone can work on handing out hotel room numbers on the other side of
that. There you go. That'd be kind of, yeah.
Not encouraging that.
No, it's wrong for both sides. So.
Have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.